fight for your child's life. Don't give in to all the anti-life
Yes.
propaganda that's out there. No matter what you're going to be dealt with, that is God's will.
Welcome to Straight Talk on Life Issues. It's great to have you with us. I'm Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Victor Nieves. As always, it's a pleasure to be here with you today. We're going to be talking about extremely premature births.
Every human life has value and deserves to live free from violence. But at the earliest sign of trouble during pregnancy, many doctors default to abortion, even late in pregnancy, as you will hear.
And these suggestions of late-term abortion are especially horrific because as early as 12 weeks, babies can feel pain. It's not unusual for a very premature infant born at 22 weeks to survive with medical support.
And case reports, Victor, of survival at 21 weeks are slowly increasing. However, there are still hospitals out there that refuse to resuscitate at 24 weeks. You gotta wonder if these medical institutions are keeping up with modern technology.
And the stakes are too high for so-called medical experts to not know their stuff and to then make a life-ending bad call. Today, we're joined by Dan and Deborah Fiorito. They have 9 children, and they call their 8-year-old their miracle man, Thomas. Together, they have a Christian-based outdoor family adventure camp that brings families together and in touch with God's creation.
Dan and Deborah, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
Tell us briefly your story.
In 2016, we were expecting our 9th child. At that point, we had 5 girls and 3 boys. I was due December 22nd of 2016. During the early stages of the pregnancy, the OB told me I had a short cervix and she may need to send me to a specialist. But before we even got to the specialist, unfortunately, I went into preterm labor. Thomas was born at 22 weeks and 0 days.
Yeah, so he was due on December 22nd. He was born on August 18th. And it was very challenging, obviously. You know, I was actually, I think, at a cybersecurity event, and I got the call that Deborah was being brought in the ambulance into a Loyola hospital. And because the water broke, she went in, and then they wound up saying that, well, you're not far enough along, the child's not viable, and they sent you home.
Right. And they said if I could make it at that, I was 21 weeks and 2 days or 3 days. They said if I could make it just a couple more days, just hold on,
well,
that they would intervene.
They said 24 weeks.
24
weeks. They wanted
weeks.
Her to make it to 24 weeks. I think that's what the insurance covered. So they wanted her to make it 24 weeks, and then they would help. But otherwise, stay home, rest, try to keep the baby in. And like, well, can't you give her something to, you know, stop? Like, no, we can't do anything until 24 weeks.
So he drove me to the hospital. We went in to labor and delivery. The OBs came in. They were not very pleasant. They were setting me up, right, for an IV. Dan, everybody had left out of the room. And
yeah, well, let me just preface it with this. They said that, you know, Deborah had an infection and they needed to get the baby out. And I said, well, we want to keep the baby in. You know, it's too early. And the OB has said, no, she's got an infection. There's an elevated heart rate for Deborah and your baby. So we think she's got an infection. We need to get the baby out. I'm like, well, of course there's an elevated heart rate. You know, she's in here, you know, she's at 22 weeks and 0 days and she's not feeling so great. I said, you need to run some other tests or do something. So she's like, well, I'll do a, you know, physical examination. She was examining Deborah and she looked up at me and she's like, well, placenta is not going to pass and we're going to have to do a DNC. She's like, so if you'd like, I could just do it on the fetus as well. And well, I had a few choice words for her. I told her to leave the room and I needed to get another opinion. And she went out, got like another doctor. I don't know if it was the managing OB or whatever. She came in and before she even crossed the threshold of the door, she's like, I agree with her. She's got an infection. We need to get the baby out. And I said, you know, what are you basing this on? She's like, well, she examined her and she's got a blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I said, neither of you are going to touch my wife. You need to leave this room. I want to get the head of the NICU down here and I want to get the chaplain and I want to get another opinion from another OB before you touch my wife. And I was pretty heated. And, they had someone from the NICU coming down and giving us all these stats on, the viability of life and the chance of survival, and your child's going to be physically and mentally retarded, and they're not going to be able to see, and just hammering Deborah. And I told this guy, I'm like, your bedside manner stinks. I'm like, you could leave. So we were getting, and this is at a Catholic hospital, mind you. So I'm like, what am I going to do here? We had eight other kids, and I told them, I'm like, however this baby comes into this world, this is our baby, and we're going to deal with whatever
Challenges.
challenges and issues that you're stating here, but this is our child, and this child will be born, and however God gives this child to us, this is what we're prepared for. And even though mentally and emotionally at that time our heads were spinning, and Deborah's like, you know what, you haven't had any dinner. She's like, why don't you go down and get something to eat? I'm not going to let them touch me. Like, the NICU head was coming, the chaplain was on his way, so I went down to the cafeteria and I'm like, all right, I'm going to get her in a wheelchair. I'm wheeling her out of this place. We're going to go somewhere else. And I decided that I was heading back up. And Deborah called me crying.
There was just one nurse and I in the room. She was setting me up for an IV, and I was trying to hold on. I gave one tiny little push, and Thomas's head was probably the size, of a tennis ball. It was so tiny that I could feel the top of his head crown, and within seconds he was there. He was, kicking and moving, and I looked at her and I said, "Please call the NICU." Because they weren't obliged to intervene, but thank heaven she called NICU before she called the OBs back into the room because they were on him. They helped him.
So I came back in the room and I didn't know.
That I birthed.
Well, no, I knew that you birthed, but I didn't know if Thomas was alive. And there were about a dozen doctors and nurses around him. They were, working on him, pumping the oxygen in. I'm sitting there with tears streaming down my face with a Subway iced tea in my hand. And I'm like, I'm just looking. And the nurse turns around. She's like, Mr. Fiorito, she's like, your son's okay. Like, he was born, he was kicking and screaming. We're trying to intubate him though, but he's so small, we're having trouble. So the doctor came back and he got on the phone with, the head of the NICU, and he comes back. He's like, hey, he goes, give me a second here. He goes, I'll get him. I have to cut the tube down. He gets in there, cuts the tube down, gets him intubated, and they whisked him away down in the NICU. And all this time, there was a curtain drawn. It was so strange visibly what I was seeing, because Deborah was on the other side. The two OBs, who to this day, I never spoke to them after that, and I would love to go back in and find out where they are and bring Thomas in. But they were sitting there talking, like, it was like afternoon tea, and the nurse who was there, who called, thank God for her, was over there. But they didn't even care. Like, they didn't even care to look over to see how he was, which utterly shocked me. And he got whisked up to the NICU, and they were putting the PICC lines or whatever, all these different things in him. And it was an hour before we got to see him, and we were called up there, and we had him baptized immediately.
Well, Dan and Deborah, how did you first feel? Walk us through your emotions when those doctors essentially told you that Thomas wasn't going to live.
Well, it's not just that he wasn't going to live; they were going to kill him. So yeah, I was upset. In that moment, I mean, we were pro-life. We had eight kids, taking the kids at times, to pray outside abortion clinics and stuff. But until you're faced with that moment, and you've got the weight of the medical industry, which is very anti-life, against you, and in that moment, they're trying to crush you with the hopelessness. And I just got this sense where, like, if we're experiencing this at a Catholic hospital, what is it like in other hospitals? And what are they teaching these OBs and training them in? Because it's not supporting life. Like, these are the doctors who have the honor of bringing life into the world, and they have no care for it. So again, the feeling that I had is like, there's a cancer in our medical industry. We've had OBs out there who are wonderful, right? Other OBs that we've had, but these two that we ran into really shocked us. And then, as we shared this story, it started coming out from friends who, if you're over the age of 35
Five.
or even younger now, it's ultrasound after ultrasound. and they try to find any little thing that's abnormal, and then they recommend termination. And there are countless people that I know who've taken their kids' lives because they were told that, you know, they weren't viable. And then there's countless others who were told that they're going to have, you know, I've got a brother who all three of his wife's pregnancies, she had issues, and they were told to terminate, and they're going to have these horrible deformations. All the kids are fine. So again, there's this culture of death that's gripped our healthcare system, and it's tough.
You are absolutely right, Dan. And your emotion and tears as you recount this story is because God has wired the male brain to provide for and protect his offspring. So God made you that way, and you're just demonstrating what the Lord intended from you as a father. The default with doctors with any sign of any challenge in pregnancy, the default seems to be to abortion. I can't tell you guys how many times I've heard from parents just like you how abortion was pushed.
Deborah, what was it like for you as the mother? You're fighting for the life of your child to have them come in and say that your child's not going to live, and then tell you that you need to kill your child. What was that like for you as you were in that hospital bed?
It was disturbing. I had eight previous amazing pregnancies, deliveries. We went home within 24 hours. So this was the complete opposite. Of course, I didn't choose those OBs. So those were, you know, two that were thrust upon me, had very, very different opinions. It was overwhelming. I mean, it was overwhelming. Like Dan mentioned, our heads were spinning because our other children, you know, don't have any developmental issues. And they guaranteed us that Thomas would be blind. He would never walk. He would never talk. He would have cerebral palsy. Wow, what a burden he would be. And to be the ninth child in that family would be, you know, horrific. So they basically try to give me no other option. And thank heavens Dan came in and was, you know, my solid rock. We were very, very strong together. And it was a very trying situation.
Well, there are a lot of good doctors out there. I know many of them, but there seems to be a growing number of physicians who think that MD stands for medical deity. And people are intimidated and coerced into following whatever they say. I take it abortion had never crossed your mind.
No,
No.
absolutely not.
And just to make sure our listeners understand, you were in labor for the most part. They wanted to pull your baby out in pieces with a DNC and do an abortion when your child was about to be born. Is that correct?
That is correct.
It seems too horrific to even imagine that they would do that, but you're not alone. This is not a group of rogue doctors. This is, as you say, a cancer in the medical community.
Dan and Deborah, would you say when they came to you with these suggestions that you kill your child and they presented their statistics to try and sway your opinion, would you say that that felt like you were being coerced into an abortion?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, when they say, you know, your chance of survival is next to none, and the chance that they're going to be blind is going to be
Never
this.
walk, never talk, never have a quality of life, be a burden on parents who already have eight other children.
So it's like,
I
you know,
mean,
what purpose did that serve and why? And this was a, you know, guy, again, smart guy, but the bedside manner was horrible. Like, it's like he was like programmed through his education, like, you know, make sure that you let people know, like, you know, what they're in for. And, you know, our message is give your kid a chance and don't listen to these doctors. And it doesn't matter. And if you're going to have issues, you know what? That's God's will. And every child is a miracle. And it doesn't matter, you know, what issues they may have. You know, once you have a child, and I've got friends, like, unless there's something wrong with those parents, like, they could never imagine life without them.
Let's talk in details of Thomas's condition when he was born. You said he was really small.
Yes, 18 ounces total. When they whisked him away, like Dan mentioned, they intubated him. He had an NG tube for feeding. He had so many tubes and PICC lines, and he was in this tiny isolate. We were not able to touch him. Well, we could put our hands over him, but I was not even able to hold him for the first 3 weeks of life. So with my previous eight pregnancies, the baby was immediately placed on my chest, and the baby never left my room. Within 24 hours, I would leave. So that was very different.
Yeah, and I mean, Thomas's skin was gelatinous. You could see through his skin. His eyes were
Were
huge
fused
shut.
shut.
He had a collapsed lung. He had a severe brain bleed. They said that he was going to be blind. He was going to have congenital lung and heart issues. He had to have surgery at 3 weeks because his the
The
what
foot
valve
valve.
didn't shut. But like he had to have open
A
heart surgery at 3 weeks.
heart. Wow.
When he was in there, we had him baptized. We didn't know how many days he was going to survive, and we were told, by the NICU doctors, and the NICU doctor who was on him had the world record for delivering the smallest baby ever. And he goes, listen, he goes, this is a honeymoon period. He's going to most likely take a turn for the worse. So be prepared for it physically, mentally, spiritually. A week went by. They said it again, this is a honeymoon period. Like he's beating the odds here, but be prepared for things to get worse.
Well, you would think that the doctors would be all in favor of bringing Thomas into the world, because think of all the billable services that hospital had as a result of him being alive. So if you're just talking about a dollar in cents, which seems to be driving medicine these days, there should have been that strong motivation for him
You
to
would
be
think.
allowed to be born.
Because when he got out, I think the total bills were like 880,000.
Wow.
So I mean, again, so tiny. And then he had the heart surgery. The doctor that did that was one of the top pediatric heart surgeons in the world. And this guy's known for like sleeping by the side of the bed that night. So we had a choice at 3 weeks, like either they're going to give him these meds to open up the valve, or they're going to do the surgery. And like, I asked him, like, what would you do if this was your child? He goes, I would do the surgery. And he goes, and the doctor that we've got
Because
who
it was
comes from,
guaranteed.
he's the best. And he's good. And we moved into the Ronald McDonald House after about a month because we were going back and forth. And like, every other night, they're like, he's probably not going to make it. Get over here. We're driving back and forth. And we were there with him. And we'd have these, it seemed like it was almost daily, but we'd have the meetings with the teams of doctors and what's going on with Thomas. And they started with a half a milliliter. And the biggest thing is, the stomach's not developed at all. So every day, like they would try to increase it. And after a week, he got up to 2 mil, and then he got up to 10 milliliters, and like
Wow.
this kid's getting big. And he was fighting through it. The eyes were one thing that we thought he was going to be blind up until close to the end. Even when he was released, they were still questioning whether he was going to be able to see. And they'd come in and they'd put these metal things on his eyes and do these tests. It was like from, some movie like Minority Report when he had his eyes taken out. But I had a crazy experience where when he's going in for heart surgery, I just asked God, watch him. And I had a vision that he was holding Thomas. And ever since that point, like I knew he was going to be okay. And I fought, like I was working still, I had to support the kids, and like I was just going, going, going. And people are like, what's wrong with you? Like, aren't you why aren't you a wreck? But I just knew, like, I knew he was gonna be all right.
For me, that happened at 3 weeks old. We had a team of nurses, RNs, doctors surrounding us. For the first time, I was going to be able to hold him. It was a huge production, huge production. I was nervous, I was crying, I was a little bit excited, but more negative feelings than positive. And they put him on my chest, chest to chest, and I was just bawling. I've never cried before. And he reached up with his hand and he grabbed my pinky. At that moment, I knew everything was going to be okay with him. And I
Wow.
still know what that moment felt like for me.
It's amazing how the Lord gives you those little touch points when you need them most.
How long in total did Thomas spend in the NICU?
18 weeks. He
Exactly.
was born 18 weeks premature. He was released on his actual due date on December 22nd, 2016. And
Yes,
he
and
was 8 pounds, 3 ounces.
chubby cheek.
And he looked just like he would have been had I delivered him healthy.
So the day before he was released, the guy who was on Raskas came up to me and he's like, well, Dan, never thought we'd be here. No one gave him a chance. He goes, I gave him one in a million. He goes, as a matter of fact, they tried to take him out down there because because I told him what happened. He goes, the fact that Thomas is going home on his original due date with no oxygen and no feeding tube, he goes, your son's a miracle. And I about fell over. And he went home on his original due date, December 22nd, right before Christmas. So
Wow.
what
What
a
a great
Christmas gift.
Christmas. Yeah. How did this impact your other children?
His siblings, so resilient. I don't know, when they would see him in the isolette, I would be bawling, like I mentioned. They would come over and sing to him, you know, like this wasn't abnormal to have a 1 pound brother. They would sing to him, talk to him.
Well, some of them were different than others. Others I saw go up, tears in their eyes, like, but then like Evangeline, who was six,
Seven.
she came and she's like, oh, he's so cute. No, let me brush his hair. And she'd go in and, some of the older ones I could see like they were, physically shaken by it. Some of them, like it was rough and they didn't know if he was going to survive. It was a real life
Experience.
lesson for them and made them stronger. And like when they were applying to colleges, like the stories, the essays often would center around the experience with Thomas.
Describe Thomas now. His age is.
Eight, he'll be 9 in August. He did 9 pull-ups as a 8-year-old in gym class. He's
Wow.
like, Dad, I would have gotten the physical fitness award. He goes, physically, he's very strong and talented. Mentally, I mean,
He's brave.
he's hilarious. I mean, he's a miracle. And as time goes by, it gets left in the past and you don't even think about it. But then he'll be there with his shirt off and there's this huge
Yeah.
scar. It looks like a shark bit him, like, 'cause they cut through the back, ribs when they did the heart surgery. And I look at it and I'm like, that's gonna be great. When you get older, you tell the girls you got, fought off a shark and like you got this scar here and then
He
you
did
had.
those obese.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for parents who find themselves in a similar situation to yours? Fight.
Fight. Yeah, absolutely.
Fight for your child's life. Don't give in to all the anti-life
Yes.
propaganda that's out there. And again, no matter what you're going to be dealt with, like that is God's will. It's not the doctor's will. And if you're married and you're having a child, then it's your responsibility to bring that child into the world. And no matter what the condition is. And, fortunately for many, there are no issues. They're told that they're going to have all these deformities, and there are no issues. And if there are, you deal with it. And those children are going to have an effect on others because, they could be the sweetest little souls around. You got to fight this culture of death and bring, the joy of life.
Well, thank you both. We sure appreciate the time you spent with us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, this has been truly inspiring to hear these couple talk about Thomas. But at the same time, the dad in me is outraged, absolutely outraged of what those so-called physicians put them through. It is just incredible. And as I told them, they think MD stands for medical deity, but they took that attitude to the wrong parents.
Oh, and to hear Dan's, the way that he stood up and fought for his child and fought for his wife, his actions are such an inspiration because so many times, as we talked about, those so-called medical experts will pressure and they'll coerce these people into killing their child. But Dan stood up and set an example for every man in those situations. You can do that. You can stand in the gap and protect your wife and protect your child.
And he's certainly a fighter, but at the same time, there's a very vulnerable side to Dan, which came out during our interview. The tears flowed, and I totally get that because father's role is to provide for and protect his children.
Well, and Deborah too, the resolve that she had, the resilience to stand in the pocket again and say, no, we are going to keep this child. God has given us a gift. We're going to protect it. These two are such an inspiration to me, Brad. And to you, our listener, I want to encourage you to visit our website, lifeissues.org, where we have a unique landing page for this program, and you'll be able to see the photos of Thomas as a child so that you can take them and share this inspirational story with other parents, your family, your friends, your church community, and spread the news about these premature babies and how their lives have value too. Again, that's available at our website, lifeissues.org. And be sure to tune in next time for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.